Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh, my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-foot and about
stop it.
Graham.
Just stop it already. All right, what's up, everyone, and welcome in to another Buzz Beat, your Charlotte Hornets podcast on the Blue Wire Network. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Spencer today. How's it going, Spencer?
Going pretty good. Can't complain. Caught a majority of the Mavericks game from last night today. Didn't get through all of it, but yeah, kind of a bummer performance there. I think the Mavs had some hair on their back in that game after the beating they took in Dallas. So, but yeah, I can't complain. It's going well. How about you? What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I was telling you beforehand, I'm growing out a mustache, Spencer, only because it's for my class. I'm reading a book called Mustaches for Maddie, which is about a girl who has a brain tumor, but she kind of always makes light of things by putting on a mustache on her face or putting a mustache on someone else's face. So it's a good social, emotional type of book to read to the kids. And I told the kids I would grow one out for the book. And I didn't really realize that I was going to commit to this, but I'm growing it out. And you actually confused me for Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, we jumped on and I was like, where's Richie? Why am I looking at Gordon Hayward right now? But no, it's good. Good for you. So that must like really spice up virtual class, I guess, a little bit when the kids see you with the mustache.
I guess. Yeah. and my hair kind of grows pretty quickly. So this is only a couple days worth. Right now it's kind of at an awkward stage, but it'll get there.
Well, it looks pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it does. It kind of fits naturally, I think, on you. So see how long this experiment lasts.
Yeah. I don't do well with facial hair because it just like irritates me. So I typically shave, pretty much every other day because I just hate the feel of it. But anyway, we are recording this on Thursday at 5 p.m. And like Spencer said, we had watched the Hornets in the Mavs game on the previous night. But by the time you guys are listening to this, they would have played the Raptors. And as promised, we're going to finish off these Twitter questions. We did a pod earlier this week where we recapped the Knicks game, and we were able to touch upon two of the questions, but not all of them. So check that previous episode out. If you had a question, we probably either answered it on today's pod or the one from Tuesday of this week. So we're going to start it off with a listener question from a guest from Div at StatCenter on Twitter. What is one player that you would like to see get more minutes for the rest of the season, and then one player that you would like to see get less run? Let's go, obviously, with the more minutes part of the question here, and then we can transition over to the second half of that question. I think the obvious answer, or maybe the answer that most people are wanting to hear, is probably LaMelo Ball. He's getting like 25 minutes a night. I think in due time that will come. So I'm not going to go that route. My answer is going to be Miles Bridges. He's averaging kind of around that area too, 25, 26 minutes per night. You know, being moved to the bench role obviously is going to see a decrease in your workload like he has. But I would like to see him closer, you know, even if it's just like 28, 29 minutes per night. Just give him two or three more minutes over the course of a game. I think he's been a pleasant surprise this year, just from the eye test, and even some of the numbers back that up as well, Spencer. The offense sees like an uptick when he's on the court. Feels like the team scores on all levels of the court when he's out there. You know, it just something a little bit different when he's out there. He's developed a little bit of playmaking. He's developed a little bit more ability to play on the ball. He and LaMelo have played well together. Him as a role man has been something that we've seen with him and LaMelo working together, slipping, grabbing that ball and going up for the dunk. It just seems like he has done well this year, and he's embraced that bench role. And I think, like I said, he's just shown improvements in a lot of different areas. He's definitely not a perfect player by any means. He still struggles sometimes on the off ball when it comes to defense. But I like the way that he's getting downhill. I like the way that he's playing with the ball in his hands. And so I would say Miles Bridges for this question. What are your thoughts on Miles? And then to the answer to the question, who would you like to see get more run this season?
So, I mean, yeah, to touch on what you were saying about Miles, I do think he just gets more athleticism on the floor for Charlotte, which is what they need more of as much as possible. I think with the pace they want to play at, right? Mm-hmm. With their lack of ability to pressure the rim offensively, he gives them, you know, that ability, as you talked about. He's had some moments defensively this year where he gets his hands in passing lanes, allow Charlotte to get out in transition. Sure, I just think he adds a little bit of chaos to the game that is kind of needed for this team. So I agree. I think he probably does need to see 3, 4, 5 more minutes. And I think what that would mean is Charlotte's, that means they're getting 3, 4, 5 more minutes with that small lineup, right? Because mm-hmm. when he plays the 4 and PJ's at 5, like I think it just means more of that. There's certainly an argument to be made that the Hornets should be doing that more with only one center on the roster right now. So I like that answer. The guy that I would say I'd like to see get more run is more like of a seedy answer, I guess. It's Jalen McDaniels. I remain like a little bit infatuated, probably a little bit too much with him and his, you know, kind of scratching the surface of ability to be potentially a legit 3-and-D rotational guy one day. You know, he was playing early in the season. I thought he looked okay. You know, he was not okay. I mean, I thought he was shooting the ball pretty good. And although he gets knocked off his spots defensively, he's always in the right position. Like, he's a good help defender. He can at least, like, make stuff around the rim difficult. Although he's not, like, a high-percentage shot blocker. So he's one of those guys where I would rather see more of him and less of, like, the Cody Martin, Caleb Martin experiment that I get parts of it and other parts I'm like, what are we doing here? I think that would be my answer, but you're right. I mean, everybody like wants to hear LaMelo, you know, LaMelo needs more minutes. Look, LaMelo's minutes are coming. Okay. Yeah. Especially if Devontae Graham continues to struggle, even if Devontae Graham gets it going again, like LaMelo's going to play more basketball as the year goes on. Don't worry. So I think I would go with Jalen McDaniels here. I remain steadfast in believing he can help this team, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah, I like that answer as well. He's clearly not fully in the rotation with Borrego. He's probably seen less and less minutes as the games have gone on. It feels like he's probably not even part of the 8-9 man rotation as of now. He does fit that bill as that, you know, 3/4 type of guy. Very lanky. He can get to the rim and score at the rim. He's a low usage type of guy where you can just have him spot up and shoot threes, but also he can beat a closeout as well. And then obviously just based off of his build and what you were talking about, he can be a factor on the defensive side of the court. I noted last year that he tended to be a better perimeter defender than he was a defender kind of down on the post, just maybe because of his build, but he has added weight over the offseason. And then back to the point about Miles, you know, playing with the more small lineups like you mentioned, I don't believe Miles has played a single minute as a 3 this season. And so when you look at the lineups, he's either in there with PJ at 5 or he's in there with Biz or Cody Zeller at 5. So I don't think he's played a single minute as the small forward this year. And that could be unlocking some things with Miles Bridges in terms of just being able to work in the space that is given to him. So maybe he's just embracing that role a little bit more. And maybe that's where he's best suited to play.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup combinations just like don't exist right now without Zeller, you know? Like he has to play the 4. And I agree with you. I mean, we've said this for a long time. That is his position. I mean, he's undersized, obviously, defensively to play that. But I think the scheme Charlotte is playing right now in the zone, you know, shields a lot of those deficiencies for him just with height, you know, being overmatched. So, yeah, I mean, until Zeller gets back, Miles is playing 4. I mean, it's the only position he really can play. Mm-hmm.
And you kind of touched upon this on the second half of the question from Div. Which player would you like to see get less minutes? And the players that you mentioned are exactly the players that I have listed down here. Well, first off, let me just say this. I would like to see less minutes with Cody and Caleb together. They've played 43 minutes together. Well, this was going into the game against Mavericks. And offensive rating of 94.3, defensive rating of 107. So that's a net of negative 12.7. You know, while they're different players, I think the wing/forward position is Charlotte's deepest. And that's probably a big reason as to why McDaniels isn't playing a ton. If you want other players around, you know, the Martin twins to get more minutes like a Miles Bridges, like a LaMelo Ball. I know that LaMelo Ball is not a wing or a forward. Somebody's minutes are going to have to go down. And I think if I was Borrego, I would just stick with one Martin, whoever has the hot hand, play these two less, you know, time together. Right now, I would actually choose Caleb just because he's making shots. But if that shot starts to kind of go down, then you know, Cody Martin might be the hot hand. Play him. So to get more minutes for Miles, to get more minutes potentially for Jalen McDaniels, like you mentioned, stop playing these two together. Just choose one. I don't know what they add when they're out there on the court together, other than maybe this like twin synergy that they have. But,
right.
Other than that, I just feel like they're not duplicates of each other, but it's just, I don't know exactly what you're adding.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They're not at all duplicates of each other. I mean, they're actually vastly different players in a lot of ways. Caleb has looked better this year, for sure. I mean, he's a slasher. He's an attacker. He plays with zero fear. And I think that's really what Borrego's leaned into. I mean, I think he's been seeking out Caleb more with these minutes for offensive reasons. But he's been pretty good defensively, too. I mean, we saw him get some spot defensive possessions on Luka last night. Cody just looks – Cody Martin looks like a shell of himself this year. I mean, we were very impressed last year, I think, with, like, his playmaking ability, you know, his pace, his patience with the ball on the pick and roll. Like, he just showed – an ability to get to the rim, get to the foul line, and create offense for himself and others. We really haven't seen that much at all this year. So I think Caleb has earned the minutes that he's gotten, but I agree with you. I'm not, unless we believe in some kind of twin superpowers, I don't really know what we're doing here with these two. I mean, but I should also say, I mean, I mentioned athleticism earlier, and they do bring, both of them, mm-hmm. some athleticism to your lineup. And defensive intensity when they're out there together. So there's some versatility they add. I just don't know why a guy like Jalen McDaniels has just been shunned from the lineup for what seems to be these two guys.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on Biz's minutes? Because he, I mean, obviously he's the starter at this point until Cody Zeller gets back. When Cody Zeller gets back, do you feel like Biombo should just not be a part of the rotation as much, or do you feel like he'll still get minutes?
You know, I think it really boils down to how comfortable is Borrego with this, you know, PJ Washington at five small ball. You know, does Biz just can completely get squeezed? Cody plays the center minutes and then we downsize when he's not in there. You know, or do we really just go to the small ball in spot situations and maybe at the end of a game? And Biz gets his 10 to 12 minutes and Cody plays the rest at the center position. Biz is not helping this team win. There's a stat that I like to look at every now and then. 538.com has a kind of a Raptor. It's basically an efficiency stat, but like Biz is like far and beyond, the least efficient player of the eight guys that really play so far this year, have played enough minutes to qualify, which isn't surprising. Like he just gives you nothing offensively at all. And he's actually been a little bit of a negative on defense, believe it or not, this year, you know, according to the Raptor stats. So you got to love Biz. You got to love what he brings. He always plays with a lot of energy and passion, and he'll have a nice block shot every now and then, but he handcuffs this team offensively to such an extent. And it's really the reason the Hornets, it is a huge factor as to why the Hornets are a bottom five offense in the league right now. And there seems to, I mean, until Cody Zeller returns, like, really doesn't matter how good LaMelo Ball plays. I mean, there's just like no path for this team to be an average offense in the NBA right now with Bismack Biyombo being your starting center.
It's hard not to root for the guy just because of what he does off the court and just the locker room presence that he has and how he's taken LaMelo Ball under his wing and just the relationship that they have there. But to your point, with all these slow starts that the Hornets have had, I'm sure a big reason is Biz. Like you can only appreciate Biz so much for his hustle and for his, you know, his backside blocking or, you know, his improvement in passing the ball. But when it's all said and done, he's not necessarily making this team a whole lot better. Hey everyone, I want to tell you guys about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here on Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you're going to receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, will help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms. And the best part is you can get all of this for $15 a month, the same rate any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you would like to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join. All right, next question. At McGowan Mason, thoughts on Borrego's philosophy behind his rotation slash minutes distribution between the Martin Ball Graham combination and chances of finding another big on the trade block? That was a big theme with a lot of these questions, Spencer, just talking about bigs. Go get a big. But let's talk about the Martin's Ball Graham rotation for a second here. I think for now, right now, I think it still makes sense to start Devontae. I think that's the right move. I think in due time, like we said, LaMelo will probably take over that starting position. But when Devontae's out there, he still has that threat of spacing. He still has that threat of the outside shot. He's still a good facilitator. There's a lot of things to like about Graham. And even when you look in the on-off numbers with Graham, they're still crazy high, kind of like they were last season. Here's the thing with LaMelo to me. I do think he'll get more minutes, so I don't think we need to worry about that. And he does deserve more minutes. But this offseason has been like unlike any other, right? You know, the team is at a shortened training camp. He hasn't had a summer league like any other rookies. I don't feel like Borrego, and he hasn't been, and I don't feel like Borrego should be overextending him, kind of like the Cavs are doing with their Okoro. Okoro is playing like 35 minutes a night for Cleveland. I think working him into the rotation slowly is the right move just because of how crazy this offseason has been. He's making an impact coming off the bench. And when he does come on the court, you see that noticeable difference with the team's energy and just getting up and down the court. So I don't mind the philosophy behind Borrego's rotation slash minutes between these players. And then to our previous question about the Martin twins, to me, it all boils down to just play one of them. I mean, Caleb is shooting the ball well right now. I see no reason as to why he should be taken out of the lineup. Or the rotation, I should say, and he's actually scoring at the rim this season, which is which was a low spot for Caleb last season. So that's kind of my thoughts on the Ball Graham situation.
I like the way that Borrego has approached it and how they're bringing him along slowly. I agree with you. I do think that Borrego should find ways to get to the Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier, LaMelo Ball line. You know, three man. Mm-hmm. You know, plug in your other two lineup combinations more and earlier. You know, I know you have to like stagger Rozier and Graham kind of out of the gate to get LaMelo in and give him those minutes. But you really can't, you can only trust the Martin twins so much. So I would like to see if we're going to try to win and, you know, make the playoffs or the play-in right. game, we got to find ways to get to that kind of three guard lineup combo more often. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind, Rich. I mean, I'm fine with the Martin twins, like, you know, getting these minutes here early in the season. But I do think that Borrego, and that's a way he can get LaMelo on the floor more, right? Like, that's how he can get him to 30 minutes a night, is to get him in there more when Rozier and Devontae are on the floor. And split half of the, you know, some of those minutes with Biz as the five and PJ as the four. And then the other one of those minutes with Gordon as the four. And PJ is the five, you know, and Miles also gets some of those minutes. I mean, there's ways to do it. I mean, you got seven guys you really trust. So you got to get to those. You got to get to those minutes more often if we're going to be serious about winning games, I think would kind of be my feedback.
Yeah. And if you're trying to win games, I mean, it's kind of hard to look down the road. But to my point earlier, you don't want to be overworking LaMelo on such a shortened offseason. And if you want to keep him fresh for later in the season when the Hornets might be making a playoff push for that 8 seed, 9 seed, whatever it may be, I think it's a smart move to kind of work it in slowly.
Yeah, and I would, the only other thing I would add to that is, like, if we're also, you know, if the Hornets have a vested interest in really getting Devontae Graham out of this slump. But I don't even think it's a slump. I mean, I think it's a regression to the mean, really, more for his shooting. But he needs more off the ball opportunities. He needs more catch and shoot opportunities. He needs to get to the corner more often. I mean, the Hornets as a team need to get more corner three opportunities more often. And how you get to all of those is by getting LaMelo Ball on the floor with him more often. So, you know, there's a lot of different reasons to get LaMelo more minutes. As I said earlier, I think you want to get him on the floor with your two most lethal shooters, Rozier and Devontae, but you also want to have him out there with Devontae as much as possible to get Devontae cleaner looks. I mean, just like watching that game last night against Dallas, like he's just, I mean, you know, the scout is out on him. You know, they don't let him come across along, you know, over ball screens free. There's a lot of attention on him and he's tentative. So, you know, the Hornets are really got to get creative in getting him clean looks, and LaMelo Ball is the way to get there.
Yeah, to your point, Devontae Graham, LaMelo Ball, and Rozier have not played a ton together this season, and it's a question that keeps coming up in some of the media availabilities to Borrego, and he understands the benefit behind playing those three. I guess it's just more of, you know, whose minutes are going to get cut in the process there. All right. Next question, at Rough 42, early trends that you see as unsustainable. Okay, so I guess we're going to go the pessimistic route here, and I'm going to say that opponent three-point shooting is not going to be sustainable. Charlotte, according to Cleaning the Glass, is fifth, or around there, I should say, around fifth in the NBA in defending the three-point shot. That might have changed since the Dallas game. I'd expect that to go down a bit, and here's why. I'm not saying it's been total luck by any means, but the Hornets have given up the second most wide-open three-point shots in the NBA, and they are in the middle of the pack when it comes to giving up open shots. And I think wide-open shots is defined by 6-plus feet from NBA.com. So when you don't have a defender that close and the team is fifth in the NBA and allowing the fifth lowest three-point percentage, to me there's a little bit of luck involved, and I think that is going to have to go down. So they're going to have to get better on defense. They're going to have to get better in terms of closing out and being in the vicinity of shooters, because eventually giving up that many open shots is going to catch up with you. So that's the one trend that I see is as unsustainable. And, you know, it may not be the second worst in the league, but right now they are giving the second most wide open threes in the NBA.
Yeah, there's two things. You know, you just mentioned one of them, and the one you mentioned kind of cascades. And the more overarching point I'm going to make is they can't sustain the defense that they're playing right now. Charlotte's a top 10 defense. That is not going to last. They're 10th in the league in defensive efficiency. And I think if you just watch this team, and you didn't know where the rest of the league stood, you would guess this was a bottom 10 team. So, and you mentioned, you know, the wide open threes. I think there's probably some strategy to that. I mean, you see New Orleans is like a solid stat today. You know, they're leading in the history of basketball. No one's giving up more three-point attempts in New Orleans, and that's by design. And I think it's by design in Charlotte a little bit too. They are making teams shoot over the top, which is why we're seeing a lot of zone defense. But they're also allowing teams to get to the rim constantly. Mm-hmm. So you look at a stat on cleaningtheglass.com, which is, you know, we've talked about it before, location, effective field goal percentage. Hornets are always one of the best in the league offensively. They're actually dead last in terms of defense, but they're somehow floating a top 10 defense. Those two don't add up, right? Like, so there's going to be some regression to the mean coming. There's no way this defense can keep holding this kind of water. I mean, it's going to, by the end of the year, I would predict, you know, before the season, I said, I see a path to where this could be a top 20 defense, but that's where I'd top it out at. So I think it will end up somewhere in that range, because they're giving up a lot of threes, and they can't, even with his own defensive scheme, they cannot keep the ball in front. And then when the ball gets to the rim, guess what the Hornets have none of? They have zero rim protection, you know? Right, so there's very little resistance. And that's going to come flying back to earth. And maybe that's when we, you know, blink here at the middle of the season, the Hornets are 8 games below 500. We'll say, what happened? It's like, well, the defense is finally finding its true colors here.
It's funny you mention about, because we've texted about this before, about how Borrego loves to run zone. And I asked him a question the other day about, by running so much zone, does that limit the development of how, you know, you play man-to-man and those types of principles? Basically, what I was trying to get at was, like, is he playing zone out of necessity, or is he playing zone just to kind of switch things up? But he made a point, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but he's making the point that the team, by playing zone, by playing man, by switching back and forth, it does enhance the ability to play defense. And he keeps mentioning, and I don't have these stats in front of me, but he keeps mentioning that the Hornets' defense in the half court is top five, or like around there, top five in the NBA. He says the issue arises when the turnovers come and the transition defense, that's all baked into the statistics there. And I will agree, like, Hornets, I feel like even during the Clifford days, I feel like the transition defense has never been a strong suit of this team. And then when you do turn the ball over, you know, 17, 18 plus times, that's not going to be a good recipe for this defense. So I don't know if you agree with that response that he gave to me about it enhances the defense by switching back and forth between the zone and the man-to-man.
No, I mean, like, this is what Nick Nurse does in Toronto, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I might have said this on a recent podcast. I think that the idea of switching back and forth and keeping teams on their heels, mm-hmm. and like Brian brought up, I think, in the last pod, like, using it in out of timeout situations. And, you know, it's to take whatever they drew up on the sideline, the coach, come out in the zone or come out in the man if you were in the zone, come out in what you weren't playing before, and that's probably going to stymie whatever they had planned. Like, that stuff's normal. That's kind of basketball 101. But and by the way, he's almost right. Charlotte's eighth in half-court defense, according to Cleaning the Glass, 92.6 points per play. I mean, that's pretty good, right? Like, that's less than 1 point per possession. So I get it, but back to my point about Toronto, like, it's successful for coaches like Nick Nurse and teams like Toronto because they have the personnel to do it, right? Like, they have Pascal Siakam, they have OG Anunoby, they have they got a lot of athletes, right, that are very versatile and switchy and what have you. Charlotte doesn't have that at all. So I would almost rather see them, and they have a lot of young players too, would be my other point. So I would almost rather see them be more consistent with what they're doing, because it seems like this is a confusing concept for them to wrap their heads around. And maybe you just got to play through that, and that's fine. So, but I wish there was a little bit more consistency, I guess, defensively, especially for guys like Miles Bridges. You know, like, he needs to learn to play defense the right way, not switching up defenses every other possession. I mean, the guy can hardly think his way through one possession of defensive basketball. So, like, to switch it up on him, assignments, and what spots he needs to hit every other possession seems a little far-fetched. But that's just my opinion. So, you know, I get what Borrego's trying to get right to, but he doesn't have the personnel to do it yet.
Yeah, personnel's half the battle. Personnel's half the battle. One thing that I have noticed in the 2-3 zone, and to your point, on the previous pod, or maybe it was two pods ago, where you were talking about how the zone that they're playing now looks slightly different than what they played at the beginning of the year. One thing that I've noticed is that, let's say, okay, they're playing 2-3 zone, so there's two up top. It's kind of hard to explain this in words, but basically if the ball is on the left-hand side of the court, you have that one guard that's near the ball. And then for whatever reason, let's say Rozier is on the right-hand side, he's creeping over more towards the middle just to kind of contain any kind of penetration. But teams have been doing a good job of swinging the ball across the court. And mm-hmm. So the closest man now is the guy on the bottom, on the weak side, and he's having to come up and you know, close out. And it just creates a lot of scrambling, just as yeah. a wooded man. But that's what I've noticed teams have been doing against this 2-3 zone.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. And we really saw this. I tweeted it out today. We really saw this with Dallas, like Luka last night. I mean, he's so freaking smart. But it kind of comes out like it's a 2-3 zone, but it looks like a matchup zone at first, because the Hornets they'll pick up the ball when it crosses half. Right. If it's a really good ball handler, lethal offensive weapon like Luka. So we saw Rozier go up and meet him around half court. And then whether it was Devontae or LaMelo, they kind of propped themselves right at the nail. And then right. we saw Luka a few times just bring the guy that would be in the dunker spot right to the top of the arc, which occupies that second guard defender. And then he just uses the inside leverage that Rozier or Devontae or whoever is trying to shade him towards the sideline. He just uses that against him, and now there's space, and he just walks right down the lane and lays it in. You know, that's where the Hornets have, they gotta shore it up. Like, if they want it to look like a man-to-man or a matchup zone or whatever, when it's actually a zone defense with 2-3 principles, they've just got to be more locked in, because Luka, I mean, he's the smartest basketball player in the world. So maybe this is not to be, this is to be expected, but they've got to be tighter in that area. I just found myself like a few times last night thinking, or today watching some of this, is like, why are they picking up the ball at half court? I understand it's Luka Doncic, but like, you're playing a zone defense, so the concept is to keep the ball in front. He's one of the weak parts of his game is 3-point shooting. Like, why not make him shoot over the top? Right. Why pressure him and then give him all this space in the middle? So anyways, and you know what? They're going to see similar, you know, the idea will probably be similar against Toronto in these next two games, you know, with Kyle Lowry bringing it across half. Like, they're probably going to want to pressure him, and Kyle Lowry's smart enough to bend the zone, to your point you were making earlier, and Toronto's probably getting a lot of shots at the rim. So I would, like, if you're going to play zone, fine, but like, pack it in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
make them shoot over the top.
It almost creates too much space, too much gaps that are unnecessary. I don't mind Rozier picking up, you know, full court, 3/4 court if it's man. And I've noticed that a couple of times this year where he's done that, maybe either to try to speed up the game or just to be, you know, pestering the guy in the backcourt.
And one more, sorry, Richie, one more thing too. In this zone scheme that we've seen, and this is not, you know, just the Dallas game, I saw it a lot in this game. But the wings in the zone, the two bottom guys, not the one in the middle, but the two bottom guys, they got to do a better job of playing the gap between the guy, you know, and if you're just looking at a 2-3 zone on a clipboard, the guy, you know, the defender that would be on the elbow and the elbow, they've got to stop that dribble penetration and make the ball go to the corner, right? I know that nobody wants to give up corner threes, but like, again, I keep coming back to this idea. If you're going to play a zone defense, keep the ball in front. So if the initial defender is getting beat, that guy from the corner has got to come up and make that ball go back outside. Mm-hmm. Because I just don't understand why else you would be playing a zone. You can't be playing a zone defense and allowing teams to get to the rim at the volume that the teams are against Charlotte right now. I mean, it defeats the purpose to me. So that's something else I've seen that Charlotte has got to clean up.
All right, so here comes the run of questions about trades and big man and targets at the deadline. But this next question, I'm just going to group the next two questions together. At WRD9090, he's just simply asked, where is Monk? And then the next question comes from at BuzzCity12. Since we are not playing Monk, who is a possible post-player trade target for Malik Monk? So, first off, I always struggle with the trade machine. I really do. I either can't find a realistic option, or the other issue that I have is creating a trade that moves the needle for the Hornets. Mm-hmm. I'm looking up and down the league, and I'm not really sure what team actually needs Malik Monk right now or would want Malik Monk. I even maybe tried to – what did I do today? Oh, yeah, I did a little challenge trade with the Clippers with Monk going to L.A. Probably going to mispronounce his name. Fiondu Cabignelli.
Kevin Gelly, from Florida State.
That doesn't work straight up because Clippers are a tax-paying team and they can only take back like $2.5 million, and Monk is getting paid $5 million. So even when I try to do something as simple as that, I can never find a trade that works, and I'm not sure there's a ton of value right now for Malik Monk. I challenge our listeners to send us a trade that's fair, that moves the needle for the Hornets and also works under the salary cap, because I'm struggling with that. So what are your thoughts on Monk's value, first off? And then secondly, have you thought of any kind of center trade targets that could work with Malik Monk?
I mean, I would guess that Malik Monk has no value in the NBA in terms of the trade market right now. So I just think it's really, really difficult to come up with with trades for him. I mean, you're not getting anything back of value. So therefore, he has no value, I would think. But I mean, if the Hornets, you know, if you want to upgrade the center position, which I think is debatable, like, I think there's this idea that they need to do it. Like, it should be priority number one, on the action item list for this team. I don't know if I totally agree with that. Number one, because PJ Washington is you know, lineups with him at five are still succeeding from a net rating perspective over 12 games or however many the Hornets have played. And then number two, like, Cody Zeller is coming back this season. Like, he will be back. We don't know exactly when, but it kind of feels like it's not too far away. So, the team you have to look at, though, if you want to upgrade the center position, is Cleveland. Like, they've got 13,000 centers on that roster right now. Like, they're not going to stick with all of them. I think that the name I've seen a lot from not only some Hornets fans, but just a hot name on Twitter right now is Larry Nance. And I think that's a good one. I like Larry Nance a lot. I mean, he's a really good offensive rebounder. He's an energy guy. He's developed his game too, where he can shoot it from the outside now. I think the Hornets would obviously be totally fine playing him at center since they play a 6-7 guy at center for about 35% of their minutes. So great target. I'm not sure, what you're giving up to get him. That becomes the tough question. But, Richie, we always get these, we get these trade questions and trade scenarios come up with the Hornets all the time. But it's like, if the Hornets are going to make a trade to improve this roster, they're going to have to move on from a young, what I think that Hornets fans would consider is an asset. And that doesn't mean Malik Monk, because he is a negative asset, even on a rookie contract at this point. He just is. He has no value. So, if we're going to make a trade to improve the center position or just improve the roster,
right,
just get another dynamic offensive wing. Like, Miles Bridges has got to be in the trade, in my opinion. He has to be. And I was kind of okay with if the Hornets wanted to trade up to number one in the draft, which was some of the buzz back whenever the draft is. I don't even hardly know what month it is anymore. But, Miles Bridges' name came up, and I said, look, I don't think that price is too steep. If you've got your guy at one that you want, Miles Bridges is fine. He's improving. But I'm not a big Miles Bridges guy. Like, I think he is what he is. He's an athlete. He's going to improve on the margins. Defensively, he's going to be an okay three-point shooter. We've seen a little bit of playmaking chops this year, but
I feel like I'm the highest on Miles out of all three of us.
Well, it's hard not to be, right? He's one of those guys. Like, I've learned my lesson on a lot of these really athletic wings in the NBA where you just they do something and you just drool. You're like, oh my God, this guy could ever put it together. Right. Like, Jeff Green is probably the most famous example of this. And I think Miles kind of falls in that bucket, but I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but if you want to improve the roster, I do think that he still has enough value across the league to where if you traded him, you could probably get a pretty nice piece back. So he's got to be in a trade if you want to improve this roster.
Are you saying that for Nance or just in general?
I think he'd have to be in it for Nance. I really do. Yeah. And if you want to improve the center position, let's zoom in a little bit. If you want to improve the center position, I think Miles Bridges has to be in that trade.
Yeah. And I think some people would be uncomfortable with that move, especially with, like I said, with the way he is playing this season. He's taken some steps in the right direction. Again, he's not a perfect player by any means. And here's my thing, going back to Monk in this question, it seems like he's not part of Borrego's rotation at all. For whatever reason, you cannot use the COVID excuse anymore. Obviously, that set him back. But at this point, it doesn't feel like Borrego trusts him at all. But agreed. I feel like Borrego's got to try him. He's got to try him with this new look offense, with this new look roster. He would bring something that is lacking at times. Like, we do not finish well around the rim. Malik Monk does. He has that ability to be aggressive and get towards the rim. He's also a facilitator with the ball in his hands, something that we are lacking as well. So I think it's fine if you just let him play out the season and his contract expires and we don't necessarily get anything in return for him. I'm okay with that, but I do feel like Borrego needs to trot him out there, get him some minutes, see what you can get out of him. And if you can put him on the court, maybe he does up his value just slightly, if that's the route that you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I do think that the Hornets should try to find a way to get him on the court somehow.
Yeah.
It's just, I think what the real challenge is at this point, outside of the fact that Borrego doesn't trust him. I agree with that, Richie. I don't think Borrego trusts him either. I think that's the main reason we're not seeing him out there right now. But when you have small guards like Terry Rozier, Devontae Graham, and LaMelo Ball is not a small guard, but he is a guard that, you know, at this point in his career, 19 years old, he's a little bit of a turnstile with on ball defense, right? So like then add another small guard that, you know, is a pogo stick. Sorry about the crying baby in the background. That's a pogo stick to the rotation. It's just like it's just hard to get to him. You know what I mean? So. But I will say this too. You know, I brought up the point about LaMelo Ball playing with Devontae Graham, you know, early in the episode, and how that could really unlock Devontae Graham's shooting ability, get him off the ball more. I think Monk could do the same thing because we've seen Monk's ability to create offense. I mean, we saw that very, very vividly, you know, at the end of last season before his suspension kicked in. So maybe if you can get Devontae and Monk on the floor together more often, there's a way, you know, to get Devontae going there too. But I just pick one of the Martin twins to pluck away. Just pick one. I don't care what it is. Caleb's numbers look good so far this year. Really good. I referenced the Raptor stat earlier. Caleb Barnes actually leading the Hornets in that stat, believe it or not. So it seems like he's earned his minutes, but like just pick one and put Monk in. I mean, what are we doing? Like you spent a lottery pick on this guy. The least you can do is audition him to see if you can recapture his value.
Yeah, I think Borrego must have a short leash on Monk. And then maybe he's just not performing in practice. Maybe he's taken a step backwards. We don't know. I mean, we just haven't seen him out on the court other than some preseason games. These next two questions kind of relate to what we're just talking about. Do we need another center or just wait for Zeller to get back? That's from @ThatManFran. Another question @BobbyHarward2. Who are some realistic big man targets at the trade deadline or free agency even for next year? To the conversation that we're just having, I think we do need another center. I think it's a weird position because there are, I've mentioned this before, we do have a lot of bodies at the center position, but it just feels like the bodies are not productive. You have Vernon Carey, you have Nick Richards, but it doesn't feel like they are ready yet. It does not feel like they are ready for the NBA game. And it's going to do them some good to go play, I feel like, with the Greensboro Swarm. And to your point earlier about, you know, when Cody Zeller gets back, maybe Borrego will favor PJ Washington as the backup five as much as possible. Maybe getting a center is not all that important. There was one center that I had my eye on as I was preparing for this podcast, and that was Jared Allen. But we all know what happened the other day where he was traded to the Cavaliers. And he's actually a 2021 free agent, I believe, a restricted free agent. I'm not sure if at this point it's going to be worthwhile to go after him, because I could see Cleveland just matching that if they're going to trade for him. So I don't know if you've looked at the 2021 free agency class in terms of centers at all, Spencer, but
it's not deep. I mean, deep. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of options. I think the best way would be via trade. You know, Miles Turner's playing some really good basketball. I mean, he's kind of like in the defensive player of the year conversation, I would think, right now. And I brought his name up as a potential target in the past for Charlotte, because, I mean, how much longer is Indiana going to like kick the rock down the road with a Sabonis Miles Turner experiment, you know? So he's a name I would look at. Again, I go back to the Cleveland bigs. Andre Drummond will be a free agent this summer. He's really playing – I mean, I'm not an Andre Drummond guy, but he's playing pretty good basketball this year. And, like, he's, like, passing it from the high post. Like, they're running a lot of offense the way I've been pretty impressed with his development, actually. Wouldn't advise the Hornets to draft him because I think he's more of like a – you got to kind of throw it to him in the post. I mean, he's more of that high usage kind of big. I mean, I think the Hornets with all these guards and certainly with LaMelo Ball, I mean, they need a guy that's a rim runner. So Drummond's name comes to mind. Yeah, should have done more research beforehand about this. But I mean, the point being, there's not a lot of options. I mean, the Hornets really need to – they really need to get into the lottery, and they need to get another good pick, because like another as in good pick as in like top three, because Evan Mobley would be just so perfect for the evolution of this team. I mean, him and LaMelo Ball, I mean, it would just be a dream come true. But with the way they're playing basketball earlier this season, I mean, it doesn't look like they're gonna draft that high. But you never know. They had the eighth best odds last year and pick third and might have ended up with the best player in the draft. So,
yeah, that's true. Did you, speaking of Drummond, did you see that possession with him where he had the ball at the high post and he like didn't move for like 5 seconds? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, yes. I mean, he's a black hole offensively. There's no question about it. But I've probably seen a few of those this year, Richie. I feel like I've seen a number of those in his career for sure. I don't think I'm like recalling the exact possession you're talking about.
I'll show
just,
you after.
He held
the ball, and I thought my video was not working because he literally was not moving. But then the players around him were. So okay, wait. Okay, so this is not my video glitching. It's just him not moving, and then he drives. Spencer, he drives, and when he goes, he kind of does like a little flip shot, underhand flip shot, and the ball goes backwards. Like
I do know what you're talking about now. Yes. I've seen this on the Twitter sphere somewhere. Drummond's one of those guys that's going to make you scratch your head, you know, once every four or five possessions, but he's a behemoth, right? Around the rim. He gobbles up rebounds. He's become a pretty efficient scorer. Like I said, he's shown some like passing chops from the high post this year. Like maybe there's something more in there, you know, to bring out in him developmentally. But I wouldn't advise that for the Hornets. But we've seen Charlotte connected to him in trade rumors in the past.
Yeah, a lot.
They were maybe, you know, having some calls with the Pistons before Cleveland got him in that trade at the trade deadline last year. So I wouldn't rule it out, Richie. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan. But to your point, we've always kind of been connected to Drummond in some shape or form. But to all these questions about trades, like I said, I just struggle to find a deal out there that could work, also moving the needle. So I'm going to challenge our listeners to come up with some of these fake trades. I'm sure a trade exists out there, but just nothing comes up in my mind. We have a couple more questions. We'll get to these pretty quickly here. At Fitch for Hornets. Seems pretty obvious that Vernon Carrion and both two ways are headed to the G League bubble. Do you guys anticipate any other players joining them? And then at 95, keep pounding. Will we see Vernon Carey or Nick Richards get any run this season? So those two questions are connected, and we'll talk about that real briefly here. So it seems, though, I think it's like late January, they are going to be arriving in Orlando for a bubble. And then I believe in early February, the G League games will start down there. The two-way players that he mentions are Nate Darling and Grant Riller. He also says it's obvious that Vernon Carey is going to be one of those. I can't decide whether or not Borrego favors Carey or Richards. I tend to think he actually favors Richards a little bit more. Question for you. I don't know if you know this. So with this being a bubble down in Orlando, and so you're sending these players to play with the Greensboro Swarm. If you send them down there to Orlando, are you allowed to call them back up to the NBA team, or are they stuck there for that month because it's a bubble? Do you know that answer?
That's a great question. I would let me see if I'm thinking about this the right way. I would think since they're in a bubble, like they're in the safest situation the NBA has going. Right.
Yeah,
so you should be able to call him back to market, I would think, and throw him in. I don't know. That's a great question, though. I don't know if the NBA has decided that. I'm sure they have, and I haven't seen it, but
neither have I.
Only other name, though, I would say, I think the question was based around, or at least one of them, you know, who else outside of these two ways in these second round picks? I mean, Greensboro just drafted Admiral Schofield, number one,
right.
In the G League draft. So, I mean, he certainly would be with the team. Was really bad with Washington. Really bad. Although I really liked him in Tennessee. That was a really good Tennessee team, by the way. I think he played with Grant Williams at Tennessee. So, you know, it's an interesting pick. I'm not going to like lie to you and say I did a bunch of research about the G League draft before it happened. But, you know, Schofield's a 6'5". Wing who is huge for his position, somewhere around 230 pounds, but like I said, he didn't shoot the ball well in Washington. He had a bad defensive rating, so Charlotte sees something that they think they can develop, that's probably who I'll be most interested in, honestly, even over the two-way guys, I guess, outside of Riller. Like, that guy just interests me exponentially because of his offensive talent. But yeah, let's see what happens with Schofield, because the Hornets need guys like that, like strong wings. And not that he'll ever crack the NBA rotation. But yeah, that's who I'll be paying pretty close attention to in the G League bubble.
And I would love to know that answer about whether or not they can, you know, come and go freely, or how is that going to work? Because you wouldn't want to send a guy down there and then an injury occurs and they're stuck in the bubble or whatever it may be. All right, last question from Barese Filippo 4. With how things are looking right now, would you give up on Borrego if he doesn't get to 36 wins? So 36 wins, Spencer, is actually a 500 team in a 72-game season, right?
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, 36 and 36. To keep this answer short, I'm going to say no. First off, I don't believe Charlotte is going to be 36 and 36 by the end of the season. I think they're hitting a hot streak right now, having won 4 out of their last 5 games. And then obviously they have a game against Raptors after this recording, so who knows how that's going to be. But I don't believe they're going to be 500. They might be close to it if they perform at their highest level. But I would not give up on Borrego. I think a lot of people find faults in a lot of things that he does, but he was brought in here to be a player development coach. I think for the most part he is doing that. I do like his X's and O's. I feel like he's a good X's and O's type of coach. Clearly the defensive side, while it is higher in the NBA rankings right now, there are some things that need to be kind of cleaned up. But again, it goes back to our previous conversation. Maybe a lot of it deals with personnel, not having the personnel to be a good all-around defensive team, top 10, top 15 team. To Spencer's point, it's probably going to drop down closer to the 20th overall. But to the question's, you know, premise here, if Hornets don't get to 36 wins, are you giving up on Borrego? I'm going to say no. No, I think you let the contract run out here and see how he can perform, but I would not give up after this season, no.
No, I totally agree. No, I'm not giving up. To your point, number one, that's a 500 record. So that would be a wild overachievement for Charlotte if they were able to get there. And number two, like, you know, Charlotte was projected to have still one of the fifth worst, top five worst records in the league into the season, you know, so they're 6-6 right now. I still think they don't get to 30 wins. But you know what? Like, overall, Borrego is proving once again, although it's super early in the season, that he can scratch out more out of team. You know, he can get the sum out of a team that is greater than its parts. And I think that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind with him. Although he's not a perfect coach, I have a lot of defensive questions, but his philosophy is pretty advanced. He has brought Charlotte into modern day basketball. Love Steve Clifford, my boy, but he's a dinosaur basically at this point in terms of coaching. So like, Borrego's done so much for this franchise in terms of bringing them, you know, up to date. And you just got to get the personnel in here now. And we've seen Charlotte try to do it through free agency. We saw him get LaMelo Ball through a draft. Like, give me two, you know, give me one more summer of that, maybe two more summers, like 3 years from now, 2.5 years from now. We're looking at a roster that's ready to win in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, I understand Michael Jordan's the owner, and maybe I understand why this question was asked. You know, maybe we have a little bit of an impatient owner that does want to win. Not maybe, we do. So, you know, I hope that this early success does not skew the truth, which is we are still in a developmental phase. There is no reason to get over our heads. Stick with Borrego. 2 or 3 seasons from now, we should be picking some low-hanging fruit and some real success.
I think you judge James Borrego once when he gets the players in here. The younger players are developed, and you maybe get a couple more players that actually can produce on both ends of the court. That's when you truly judge James Borrego, not right now with this roster. All right, before we get out of here, I want to make you guys aware of a giveaway that we got going on Twitter. So get in on that at BuzzBeatPod. It's for a free t-shirt. All you got to do is like the post that is pinned to our account right now. I will say that the contest does end on Saturday. So by the time you're listening to this, you probably have 24 hours or less to get in on it. If you tag a friend, it puts your name in twice. And so what I will do is put your name in a random name generator, spin the wheel. If you tag someone, you'll be in there twice. And then I will contact you through the BuzzBeat Twitter account. So free t-shirt. I don't even have a t-shirt with the updated logo. I have a sweatshirt with the retro logo, Spencer. So we will get out of here on that. For Spencer, I am Richie, and we will see you guys next time.